You never arrive as a leader or as a professional. Being a leader is not just a position with more money because you were really good at something. Being a leader is...
What sets legends like Kobe Bryant, Joe Montana, and Tiger Woods above the rest? Our guest today will reveal the one key trait that defines the best and how embracing it can elevate your leadership to the next level. Welcome to the Learn It All podcast, the show for today's leaders who want to get ahead and stay ahead because we believe that great leaders aren't born or made, they are constantly in the making. I'm your host, Damon Lemby, two-time best-selling author and CEO of Learn It, a live learning platform that has helped upskill over 2 million people over the past 3 decades. Today, I'm joined by Chris Gargano, a former sports media executive, Emmy award-winning storyteller, podcast host, college professor, and founder of the Gargano Leadership Group. Over his 30-plus year career, Chris has captured the stories of sports icons and led content teams for organizations like the Oakland Raiders, San Francisco Giants, and New York Jets. In this episode, I'm going to be asking Chris to share his thoughts on the defining quality that separates elite athletes from the rest of the world, how you can master storytelling to connect and inspire your team, and why leading with care drives exceptional results. So, Chris, you've had an incredible fortune for, I think it's 30 plus years. You've been surrounded by elite athletes in the sports world. At the core, what is one key trait that sets legends like Kobe Bryant, Joe Montana, and Tiger Woods apart?
Continuous learning, Damon. That is a great first question, if I may say to you. And again, I'm so excited to be here. I would say continuous learning. If you study Kobe, those great examples, Tiger, Kobe, Joe Montana, Joe was always into the playbook and figuring out, you know, calling audibles at the line. Bill Walsh would script the first 15 plays. They collaborated well, right? And they obviously dominated winning Super Bowls, the 49ers in the 80s and 90s. And then you look at Kobe and Tiger, the other two examples you gave. Tiger revamped his swing. He's always messing with, all right, can I putt here? How do I approach the green? How high do I put the ball on the tee? I mean, every little detail was always being thought about by Tiger. And I've studied these guys probably as you have. Kobe Bryant would get up at 3 a.m. to be able to work out before the early workout with his teammates. It's legendary, the Mamba mentality. So I love the fact that those three examples are folks that always wanted to learn, were coachable, and wanted, yes, were they fierce competitors? No doubt. Did they win? Of course. But the reason that they're so worthy of being looked at and examined their careers is because they always wanted to get better and were open to learning despite the fact they're great. And some are the greatest of all time.
Absolutely. And so let's just stay with that for a second. So when it comes to professional growth and being in a work environment, how does learning play a part there?
So I love your company, obviously. That's what you do.
You had me at hello with that one, by the way.
Yeah, that's just so true. So I would say, damn it. I was talking with somebody who's an expert in public speaking. She was on my podcast, Eva Rose Daniel, an incredible woman. And one of the things she said that just resonates, because that's exactly what I say in my workshops or one-on-one coaching or my teaching, which is this: you never arrive. Her example was you never arrive as a public speaker. And my personal opinion is you never arrive as a leader or as a professional. And just like we talked about with those three examples of those incredible athletes, they never thought they arrived. It was an evolution of learning and getting better and always taking in information, being curious. You know, I always, because when I, in my earlier career as a reporter, producer, anchor, I always used to say I would have my head on a swivel, which meant I never wanted to miss an opportunity at a sporting event or even in a one-on-one interview. What are they not saying? That was where I really learned continuous learning. Like I'm never finished. Yes, I have to leave the story, go write the story in my previous life, put the story together, and you know, I had a deadline. But now, you know, in helping professionals, young, mid-career, or in the C-suite, it's like just embrace getting better. How can you look at a podcast, watch a podcast, read a book, read an article, talk to a mentor, constantly like just have an appetite of getting better? And that helps, you know, coming from sports and bringing that to the business world. You'd have to ask the clients, but they seem to really enjoy that.
Where did your passion for curiosity come from?
I've always been that way, and I love that question. I always think, Damon, I think it got honed or I got better at it when I was an early professional in, you know, the sports media. Because there would be, back in the day, there would be ABC, CBS, like we'd have reporters at the various markets that I was in. Let's call it, you know, as I got into the bigger markets, there'd be more journalists. And we were all covering the same event or interviewing the same person. And that's typical, right? That's what sports media is. My thought was, if I could ask, if I get a chance to have a one-on-one, or I could see something in the background to make my story a little bit different so the viewers can have a reason to watch us every night, right? Just a little something. What is it? An angle, a different leverage point in their story that could take it maybe in a unique way. That's where the curiosity really became part of me and part of my DNA. And then I took that into the professional world when I became an executive producer and overseeing these content units. I would be, let's be curious in meetings, talking to the head coach or talking to whomever we were trying to cultivate, the, you know, bringing in the TV or the digital shows into affiliates or sales partners, ask questions. What do they want? How can we create a partnership that works for everybody? And that's all curiosity.
So let's take a step back. How did you get drawn to the professional sports world?
I was in sports media. I was covering sports. And I started to do these documentaries. This is back in 2000, 2001, 2002. And I started to, unofficially opened a little production unit. And from that, my boss at Fox Sports Bay Area said, hey, you know, the Raiders are looking for somebody to oversee their content department. So he said, you might want to just go talk to them. So he recommended me. They agreed. I went over there and they said, yeah, you know, your skill set matches. You've told stories, write, edit, produce. You have a background in all of it. You could really help our department learn these things and then produce at a high level for then the Oakland Raiders. Would you be interested in coming over? And I'm leaving out a lot of steps in the interview process, but that's how I got introduced into professional sports. And if it wasn't for that great boss of mine, Ted Griggs, that his recommendation, it never would have happened. And he's a wonderful mentor. He was wonderful to me back in those days, still is. And the point is that recommendation and my seeing that, hey, you know, maybe I can lead a department. I didn't know anything about leadership, but I did know a lot about storytelling. And so I had to learn to be a leader, which is another podcast in itself. We could take 3 days because Lord knows I had a lot to learn.
When it comes to being a leader, Chris, do you think that you're either born that way or are you made?
So this comes up a lot in my classes at NYU and Montclair State here in New Jersey, New York. And it also comes up in workshops. And you know, this is what you probably get asked this a lot yourself. My personal opinion is, you're born with certain attributes that help you become a leader. But I go back to my original point, which is you have to learn to really bring those attributes out. That skill set, communicating, listening, caring. Damon, you know, caring about people, right? Are you born to care about people? I'm not sure. I'm not a psychologist. I don't have a doctorate degree in any of those related, you know, specialties. But I think if you learn to care about people, understand yourself, what your strengths, weaknesses are, as you lead your life and make room for people to grow, you could grow in my opinion, into a leader. But you have to want it. You have to want to lead people. It's not something you just get promoted because you're really good at a skill, and then you just say, okay, I'm going to keep doing this skill. Oh, and then, hey, you know, you go do this or whatever. You know this, Damon, better than anybody. Which is that you have to want to lead, you have to care, and you have to work on your skills, just like we've been talking about consistently as a continuous learner. In my opinion, that's what I have learned through my years of studying this.
I think one very important tip you mentioned right there is you have to want to lead. Chris, I'm sure you've experienced this, but I've seen so many top performers, individual contributors in sales departments or other departments, automatically get promoted into a leadership role and they are miserable because it's a completely different skill set. And so, you know, for our leaders out there and top performers who are listening into this, you got to really understand before you promote somebody or hire somebody into being a leader, what is their passion behind it if they have a passion behind it?
So you just answered it yourself, I think, is that I have a slide that I show in all of my workshops and all of my seminars per se, which is on the left side of the slide, there's a computer and there's, you know, like a piece of paper with a pen. It's a still shot, right? And it's your skill set. You're a graphic designer, you're an accountant, you have something you're really good at, to your point, and you get promoted by doing the things on the left. And then on the right are these stick figures. I mean, they're artistic, but they're blue, right? And they're just people. There's like 20 people. And it's, you know, divided in half. And the heading says, this is the work, meaning you have to be the full person as a leader. You have to have a skill set on the left, right? Whatever it is you've done really well, fill in the blank. Like I said, you can be an accountant, a graphic designer, somebody who's really good at marketing, and you've been an individual contributor. Now you're getting promoted. Now you have to understand the totality of that, which is you're responsible for the people that used to do what you did on a daily basis. That's a different skill set, as you're saying, right? And that involves compassion and empathy. These are not just words or mantras that are put on a wall or, you know, mission statements. These are something you have to act out every day and work to get better at and work to understand how you are able to help people, empower them, and not just like transactional, right? Hey, we need to do this. This is how I did it. Here's how you should do it. That's a form of teaching, but it has to be done in a way that they understand. And how do they process information? And that involves the caring and the curiosity and understanding them. But Damon, as you know, also understanding yourself and how you're coming across and your words and how your messages are landing. It is not easy. We all need help with it. And as I've gotten older and more experienced in life and learning and getting my master's in leadership, I realize that we all need help. You're never done. Tiger Woods, right, wants to make a comeback, and back to him again. He is out on the range. He's pounding golf balls. He's hitting his 6-iron 200 times a day. I'm making it up, but you know he probably is. And how many 6-irons has he hit over the course of his life? Probably millions, but he's still working on that rhythm and his pacing, his foot placement, ball striking, etc. Well, it's the same for leaders, in my opinion.
So what I hear you saying is that even if you're not born with those innate skills, everybody can become a leader if they put in the work to become more curious, to be self-aware, and really go for it.
I do. And I think you have to want it, though. Being a leader is not just a position with more money because you were really good at something. Being a leader is caring for people. In my opinion, in what I've learned, what I've studied, what I've researched, what I teach, is that you have to be, right, curious. You have to be optimistic. You have to be aligned, the things we talk about in my program. And then at the end, and that's that backstop, you and I both love baseball, which is that self-awareness, right? It's like, okay, I was just talking about this with somebody the other day, right? You walk into a meeting, you're the leader. We'll do a mini case study here, Damon. Let's have some fun.
Do it.
Right? You walk into a meeting, you've got your agenda, and you say, okay, you're thinking about it. You're walking in, you go through the door, you see the sea of 20 people. They're all looking at you. It's an important meeting. You have your agenda in your hand. You literally either have your laptop, a piece of paper, something to reference. You look down, okay, here we go, everybody. And you say, here are the 5 things we need to do. Does anyone have any questions? All right, there's a couple of questions. And then you leave. Anyone could do that, right? Anyone with a title and the access to those people based on an org chart or whatever can walk in there and do that. But there's nuance to it. How do you walk in? Who do you look at? What do you say? Are you smiling? How do you greet everybody? Do you create an open environment through a little bit of humor, through humility? Hey, how's it going? Did you see the game last night? Or, hey, I understand you had that huge project. How did it go? Or, great job to the person sitting 5 seats to the right, right? How's everybody doing? Okay, everybody. And then you ease into the agenda. And notice all those little checkpoints I just said. It's about voice, eye contact, humility, spirit, right? I mean, I'm not getting too deep here, but like, what is your body language saying? And Damon, as you know, when you coach people in this, they say, I don't have time for this. Well, in my programs, I have little studies and I compare a way to greet and open a meeting. And I get people to do it on their iPhone or whatever, your a little stopwatch, I don't care. Time somebody opening a meeting in a harsh, like no time, I'm doing it in quotes, right, type of way, compared to, hey, let's welcome everybody. And the difference is negligible. It's like 2 or 3 seconds different. It's a mindset. It's how you think about people and how you welcome them and create openness and being inclusive to everyone and bringing everyone in. And then you can leave the meeting. What does it take just to have like some polite and exchanges? It takes 45 seconds, a minute 30, even if it took 5 minutes. How do you think those people feel when they leave? They're going to be ready to do whatever is needed because they feel like they're part of something. And that is what I obviously, you could see by the way I'm talking now, I feel very strongly about that. Kindness. There's such a place for kindness and compassion in leadership. I just could talk about it all day.
So, Chris, for a leader who wants to learn how to better connect with their team, what is one practical tip you can give them to walk away with today?
Ask questions. Ask questions. Just say, instead of say, you know, just, hey, what's going on? And listen. Listen to somebody. So I would say, and they're partners, Damon, you know this. They're family members. Ask a question and listen and care. Ask a question and listen to the answer. And it's not just, how's the project going? Sure, ask about that. But how are you doing? And caring about the answer to why. So the answer would be, so the question is, why do that? So you're connecting with somebody. And again, it doesn't take a lot of time. It just has to be sincere. And how are you doing? And then they'll say, okay, yeah, I'm working on this. And then maybe if they want to bring in something personal, which is fine. Understanding and knowing your people is helpful because when it gets really stressful, as all work sometimes does, those connections bring and that trust bring you through challenging times. So my advice would be care about your people, work to connect with them through asking questions and truly listening. And I said I was going to make it simple, but there are steps to it, right? You got to ask the questions and you got to listen. And it's just having that true sense of camaraderie and eventually developing chemistry within a team makes for better performances. That's the business ROI, that people will get better in their performance if they're thought of and they are thought of by their bosses and leaders per se to be cared for.
So let's stick with self-awareness and listening for a second.
Sure.
A lot of people think that they're good listeners, but they're not. How can a leader, I guess, reflect and on their ability to listen and see if they're really truly listening or just kind of hearing what people are saying?
So there's a few tactics you could use, Damon. You can repeat back the words that someone has just said. You could say, I understand that. You could, it's also about what are you doing while you're listening, which is giving everybody your full attention, right? Not having a phone, a computer screen. Early in my leadership career, they used to tease me, yeah, you're looking at the computer, you're not really listening. And they would say, Chris, you're not listening. I'd say, oh my God, you're right. And then I would go and engage with them fully. And I'm glad they called me on it, right? You know, because I had the ability to listen, but multitasking didn't work. It did not work for them, right? And if you make listening about the other person, here's another little tactic that I've, you know, and this is somewhat, you know, interesting, but taking notes when someone's talking, you know, not to constantly be looking down, but it shows that you care about what they're saying and it's a reference point for later. You don't have to write a novel or anything, but there's other little tactics from which to show somebody that you're listening, asking follow-up questions to what they said. Right? So you're engaging in a one-on-one type of conversation and listening. What did you mean by that? That's interesting, right? Or could you give me a little bit more on that, right? In your own way and not formal, right? Listening should be informal. It's you and another person. So you don't want to say, well, what did you mean by that? Unless it's a serious topic, obviously, but just like allowing them to continue to talk and sometimes not saying anything obviously shows you're paying attention.
Thanks for sharing that. I mean, listening is so critical when it comes to leadership. It helps build trust. It helps build respect. And what I share with a lot of the people I mentor or coach is, I think great leaders take the time to connect with people, whether it's on Zoom or in person, and just ask questions. How are you doing? What's going on? You know, it doesn't even have to be about work, but they ruin that if they immediately start checking their text messages or scrolling through emails. You completely lose the respect of the people that you're talking to. The other thing, Chris, that I think was so great that you mentioned was about taking notes. It's kind of well known around Learnit that if you have a meeting with Damon, with me, take notes, just out of respect. How are you going to remember? I hate going to a restaurant where they don't even write down what you're saying, right? So just take notes. I think it's key. Richard Branson talks a lot about it in his books, is just the power of taking notes. So I think that's super important.
Exactly, Damon. It's a sign of respect, too. It's like what you're saying warrants me taking pen to paper and writing it down so I can remember it. It's so important to show, to give signals that you're in this with somebody. And taking notes does that. It's like, we're in this together. I value what you're saying. So I'm going to commit it to paper to then look at it later to allow me to process it. And if you think about a senior vice president or a COO taking notes when an intern is talking, how valuable is that?
Powerful.
How that shows somebody that, wow, what you're saying has value. And there should never be, you know, barriers. And then that's why looking down, but if you maintain eye contact, that's, you could still look down, take notes. I'm very into actually every little mechanical move that we all make because you want to be there for people and show that that trust can be established and you don't want anything to get in the way of that.
I think what's important for leaders to understand is they're always on stage. So you need to model the behavior that you want your people to see and do, right? So if you want them taking notes, then you should take notes. You know, if you want them to respect others and listen, they should too. There's a lot of the little nuances, like you said, are so critical. Chris, so you were in the sports world for, what was it, like 32 years?
33, yes.
What led you to make a change and go and get your master's in leadership studies?
So thanks for that question, Damon. So I was with the San Francisco Giants and we were winning championships. I didn't throw, I didn't play, but I was very fortunate to be there when that was going on in the front office. And it was getting really complicated, meaning like there was a lot of responsibilities for all of us in the front office, which everyone would welcome because of those championships. And I was noticing, geez, I've got to be really on top of my game and I've got to be at the top. I got to take advantage of every ounce of a leadership ability that I have. So as I was getting there, year four, year five, year six, I said, you know what? I'm going to take this to the next level. I want to get better as a leader. I want to round out my worldview. I want to understand people better. So I'm going to research some programs and I'm going to go back and get a master's degree in leadership studies. I'm going to find one. So I did research and where did I land? Back at where I got my undergrad, my alma mater, St. Mary's College of California. The second, Damon, I don't mean to sound melodramatic, but even the prep call that I had, I remember where I was sitting talking to my eventual professor, a gentleman by the name of Doug Paxton, just an incredible individual. And I remember hearing his voice about what the program was like. And I said, this is for me. And I said, how am I going to juggle? You know, we had a young son back then, how am I going to juggle working at the Giants, being a dad, a husband, and then also getting a master's degree? I said, I got to do this. So sure enough, the first class, it was like, this was the right decision. It was hard. It was challenging. That doesn't matter. What I learned and learned about myself and about the other members of the cohort, about the challenges of leadership, and we spent, you know, on the strength of vulnerability, compassion, listening. And then how do you make sure that you're still getting great work done by understanding people? How do you cultivate trust? I can go on and on. The books we read, the articles, the videos, the case studies, the professors. We would have various professors for different segments, modules they were called. The papers we had to write, everything, the collaborative process. It was amazing. And so I would, go to the executive weekends that we would have at St. Mary's. I'd go back on Monday. I'd be all fired up despite the fact I'd worked all those days in a row. It didn't matter. I was learning and loving leadership. And hopefully it started to show in my professional life. And then I got the Jets job, and then I'd commute back to the Bay Area. I was excited to do it. And then my love and passion for leadership just continue to grow, and it got me teaching at NYU, and I can go on and on, and that's how it happened. But that's to answer your question, that's when and how I went back and got the master's degree.
You mentioned that you learned something about yourself when it comes to leadership. Can you share an example of what you learned about yourself?
That's a really good question. I learned that because I care a lot about people, that is going to help me in my leadership. I just have to learn how to create the boundaries around that. And through that program at St. Mary's, I did. I learned, like, okay, if you're going to care, well, how's that going to show itself? How are you going to be for this person? And understanding the individual strengths of each person based on the fact that I cared, right, a lot. And understanding, how do they care? What do they care about? So using my self-discovery and my self-awareness as a strength to see it happening in other people. So this person cares about that. Let me help them do more of that. This person cares a little bit more about that. There's a slight nuance to how they see themselves in the professional world. This person is uncertain. Let's be patient with them. And so through that education and that just epiphany, multiple epiphanies that I had throughout that time at St. Mary's, I was able to see, I think, much more of who the people I was leading and how they were navigating their challenges, stresses, and successes. And I was able to help them, I think, understand themselves so they could be the best versions of themselves. Was it ideal? Of course not. Was I still learning? Absolutely. But at least I had a framework now to understand me so I can understand them. So that's what I would say. It really gave me a kind of an internal checklist, informally, right? I didn't sit around checklisting, but I did have a way in which, okay, Chris, back off a little. All right, your emotions are coming high. All right, now I knew I had some tools now to be able to understand, hey, you're coming across a little bit this way. Coming across a little bit that way. You might want to check yourself here. Go get some quiet time. Go take a walk. Whereas before, I would kind of push through, right? And, oh, I can do it, But no, actually, you're breaking down a little bit, buddy. You got to get some mechanisms and some self-care here to understand a little bit how you're coming across. So that really helped me to understand myself so I can understand others.
And so I think it's awesome, obviously, that you love learning, whether it's through podcasts, books, or through your studies. One thing I also hear you saying, which is critical, is you take it from not just learning, but execution, applying. What is a practical tip or two that you could give our audience of how you take what you learned and you actually put it into practice?
So let's go back to listening. Let's go back to curiosity, right? So there are some folks at all levels, right, Damon, to answer your question. So whether they're right out of college or they're the CEO, and I'll say we because we're all in this together, right? And sometimes we don't want to ask that question, whether in a meeting, in a casual setting, like just talking about a project in the hallway or a one-on-one conversation, wherever the setting is, right? In a heated moment in a project, where do we go? Do we go here? Do we go there? And we're reluctant to ask a question because we don't want to look like we don't know the answer. I don't believe in that. I think asking a question invites people in. And it doesn't have to be an elaborate question. So what did you mean when just, hey, can you say that again? What did you mean? And that goes back to listening and the curiosity. I think sometimes we try to forge forward without really saying, okay, is this the best way to do it? Can we do it perhaps this way? Hey, what did you think? What did you mean by that? Right? That brings people in and brings them in closer to you and to understanding where you're coming from so you can understand where they are. So questions and curiosity, I would go back to that. So if there's somebody listening right now and they're thinking, I cannot understand that coworker of mine. I don't know where they're coming from. Now, forgive me if you've already done this, but maybe some ask them questions. Even if you don't enjoy their demeanor or where they're coming from, just say, hey, the fact is you're working with them. And the fact is, at your next job, you're going to have someone very similar to them. So it behooves us all to understand those people. And it's not just understanding those people, it's understanding us in relation to those, right? So asking questions, hey, how's it going? You know, do you want to grab a coffee or just pop into their workplace or their office or the cube or whatever and just say, hey, I was wondering about this. Just be open to listening and try to discover perhaps where they're coming from. You've got nothing to lose, right? There's nothing to lose. Otherwise, you're going to keep, you know, butting heads per se, right? So how's that working for us all? It's just listening and trying to understand others that maybe don't think like we do.
But sometimes, Chris, asking a question like, I didn't understand or I don't know this, especially from a leader's perspective, could seem as weak. So how do you, and we talked about this earlier a little bit, how do you balance vulnerability and not coming across as weak?
So that's a great question, and I understand that. And it's all about, okay, you don't have to say, I didn't understand that. Could you explain? It's more, hey, could you say a little bit more about that so we all can understand it a little bit better? It's about positioning, right? It's about how do you phrase something? And it's about you don't have to be the smartest person in the room. Vulnerability is a strength. When the leader shows that they don't know everything, that's okay, in my opinion, right? And I'm sure you have learned this as well, right? And you're and all the great work that you're doing and writing the book and this podcast that you have, it's you know, if there's vulnerability, that's all right. We're not expected to know everything. Yes, we have the position. Yes, we're in a position of leadership, but bringing there's areas of expertise throughout the department or the group for a reason. And when you say, hey, you know, you're really good at that. I've said this to you in private. Now I'm saying this to you in public. Could you just, for all of us, including me, give us a little more on that. That's really good. I'm not sure I understand that. It's okay. They'll look at you as one of them, right? When the leader says, I don't understand, or I can work to get better at that, you're thinking, I could trust this person because there's you don't want to create that barrier where here's what we do, here's how I do it. Anyone could do that. Anyone could do that. And the way that we are, you know, with access to so much information via the websites and the internet and constant streams of TikTok and this expert here and TED Talks and all of this, there's so much information out there. There isn't anyone who knows it all, right? So we're not expecting everyone to know it all. We're in this together and it's fluid. And if you eliminate kind of that, oh, I'm the person or the, you know, it brings people in to share their expertise and everyone becomes more comfortable. The product becomes better and the trust is secured, right? Through everybody sharing with everyone.
The best leaders I've come across are humble. They're not afraid to be vulnerable and they surround themselves with a diverse group of very talented people and they reach out and they extract that talent and put it into play. I mean, whether it's a sports team, whether it's a business world, whatever it is, nobody has all the answers, like you said, and nobody wants to work for what I call a know-it-all, right? Somebody that feels like they have all the answers. So Chris, on top of everything you're doing, having a young son, getting a degree in leadership studies, working, you also became an adjunct professor, like you mentioned, at NYU and I think some other places. What did you, speaking of learning, what have you learned as far as from the young adults that you've been teaching a leadership to?
Oh, you phrased that perfectly, Damon. Constantly learning from them. Constantly. Talk about listening. I'm currently teaching at Montclair State graduate students in this wonderful leadership class. And the stories that they share and the way they frame things, right, then they're professionalized. And I said to them just the other night, I was saying, you know, the way you're phrasing that, you know, that you're, that you sound like a CEO, my goodness, how interested they are in getting better to our original points today, right? How committed they are to understanding the frameworks for getting better and learning and understanding their respective areas of expertise where they're working and how they communicate with the people that they're working with is something that I learn and listen to all the time. And at NYU, I've taught college seniors. Their stories as they're about to embark from college into the professional world, a lot of them have jobs, a lot of them have internships, and they're sharing how they view corporate culture and how they see leadership and how they see themselves in leadership and what is important to them. I am constantly taking in, talk about taking notes. They have to say, hey, professor, stop taking notes. I'm just kidding. But I am constantly writing down, my goodness, see, that is insightful. I can share that with the class in a couple of weeks saying, like, remember what you said in week 10? It applies so well to today's lesson. This is what you said, meaning, you know, you're strengthening all that we're learning here today. And you're understanding how perhaps this article or this TED Talk applies to everyday principles that you're learning on your own and sharing with us. So it's just, it's constantly learning from them. They're amazing. I'm so thankful that I've started teaching seven years now. Just, it's been wonderful, Damon.
Chris, you say that you learn from them their perception of leadership. Gen Z, millennials, and a lot of times these younger generations get a bad rap. My question is, do they perceive leadership different than other generations?
I would say perhaps, you know, I think it's that access to information, right? If we all have the same access to the same information, right, via what I said earlier on all the platforms, right? LinkedIn, you could just go and see all these experts on this, or again, TED Talks, or and everyone knows the internet. I don't have to explain the internet, but I think they do. And I think that is why, because we have all this, that we all have. It used to be, let's go back, Damon, let's go back 20, 30 years, right? Information was more proprietary, right? There was because there wasn't an internet. So folks would have, okay, here's the studies that we have, and it would be a piece of paper or a series of, you know, a booklet or whatever the case may be. Excuse me. So that information was shared with senior leaders, and then they would share it when they thought appropriate or how they thought it would be appropriately shared with the folks that worked there. That's a different format that does not exist today. Right. I make it an ideal situation back in those days. And sure, does some of that go on today? Of course. But now that there's ways in which to learn and understand corporate culture and how companies are reviewed and how companies are thought of in the marketplace, we have to be inclusive. We have to make sure there's room for people to share ideas and in ways in which to innovate. And if you're a leader, it helps to listen to the various generations. We have five different generations in our workplaces. You know that. So we all think and process information. Let's use that to our advantage. What is your opinion of this? What did you think? Well, I saw this the other day. How did you see that? Well, they'll explain it. Let's listen to them, right? There's value there. So the workplace, as you know, is changing. So valuing and understanding how we all communicate and process information is, that's the key.
So you spend a lot of time with the younger generations, the Gen Zs, the millennials, as they move into the workforce. And yes, there's five different generations, and it's tough. You're juggling all of it. What is one piece of practical advice you give to leaders out there on how to better engage with these younger generations?
Pay attention to how they like to communicate. If they like to use Slack or text or email, and you know they like it, you know, written out in a certain way or whatever. I mean, we can't listen. When I'm trying to be realistic here, we can't. You know, okay, here's this for you. Just pay attention. Just pay attention. If there's something that is really crucial and is needed, yeah, you have to perhaps have a mass text or Slack channel or whatever the case may be. And you know, did you miss my email? It's the reality is that these generations that are coming out of college and into the workforce have had phones with them their whole time. So we have to understand that. We have to understand that their way of communicating is different, perhaps, than this age group or that age group. And just understanding that and not resisting it, right? Again, so when you get everybody in the same room, should everybody be paying attention and put their technology down? Of course. And but when you exit that room, if somebody sees things a little bit differently or needs a, you know, the one sheet or sent to them in a certain way, because that's where they always are, meet them there. Is it a little bit more work? Yes. And, you know, but, and if it's a crucial situation, can you communicate in one united way? Of course. But just pay attention to how people listen, their form of communication, what works best for them, and realize, Damon, and here's a point. Here's something that I don't mean to bury the lead, but maybe I have my journalism background, which is to say that leadership is about others. It's not about us as leaders. It's not about what we want. We're there, servant leadership, right? To understand people and to understand how they best communicate, how they best listen, how they best collaborate, innovate. How can I see these people that I'm fortunate and privileged to have report to me? How can we get them all together to do the best work? Not how I see it, how I help them do it. That's what I think is very important. And that gives me a sense of calm, you know, thinking and saying it that way, because, right, the old-fashioned way of doing it is come into a room, hear the orders. Again, I go back to anybody could do that. But it takes like a person who's willing to learn and understand folks to get the most out of them, in my opinion.
Well, your opinion's right. I mean, command and control doesn't work anymore. And that's proven over and over, yet still so many organizations run that direction. 32 years, 33 years, and then all of a sudden you made a bold pivot. What inspired you to go out on your own?
Get the master's degree. I start teaching at NYU in 2018. Fell in love with teaching. Absolutely loved it. Started to do that, developing curriculum at NYU. The people there are amazing. The institution itself, the students. As I started doing that and working at the New York Jets and doing both, right? I was an adjunct. I'm not full-time hippo. That was not realistic. Love my time at the Jets. So I hired an executive coach. He said, you know, start putting together curriculum perhaps for others, right? Not just at NYU in your class. I said, that's a really good idea. And he said, have you ever thought about starting your business in leadership, Chris? You're meant to do this. I still talk to this. I was emailing with him today. This is back in 2021. And I said, started to think about it and started to really think about it. And then the Jets were awesome, and they allowed me to do some leadership workshops within the front office at the Jets, various folks from different parts of the organization. And we did a six session leadership workshops, and I just fell in love with the process. The whole thing was amazing. The people there were amazing, how they responded to it. I think about it, and it's just one of the highlights of my career in doing that. And again, I applaud the Jets for allowing me to do that. And from there, Damon, it was just, I have to do this. Of course, I was still doing my job there, but in my own time, I started to really develop what could a business look like doing this full time. And it's not that I didn't love what I was doing, the content creation, executive producing. Of course, I loved it. But there was this other thing that was just pulling me to do leadership full time, like help people, do workshops, see that growth, you know, just teach and share and empower full time. So in January of 23, I did it. And I've been doing it ever since. And it's challenging, the business part of it. But doing those workshops, Damon, with other organizations at various levels and different industries has been amazing. I just enjoy the heck out of it. And I prepare like crazy every word so I can maximize my time with them. And it's just all about like getting the best out of them and seeing them flourish and rise in their chairs and leave the room empowered to do great things. That's just where I am in life. And I love sharing it to the best of my ability.
Well, it's pretty obvious. It comes across that way, which I love. I love seeing somebody's passion for the work that they do. When it comes to working with your clients over the past couple of years, what are some of the, let's say, business challenges that you see happening out there that they want you to address, or even the outcomes or the behaviors they want you to help them move them to?
So it's all over. It's every, as you know, I mean, you're in the industry, you've been doing it way longer than me. It's all over. There's different issues for different folks. It goes back, and if I don't know about oversimplifying, but I kind of, there's a consistent theme. One's ability to connect with another person. So if you look at challenges, it usually stems from that. There's a difference of opinion or a different way of communicating or remote versus in person. And there's an inability to connect and develop that trust so everybody could be moving in the same direction. I am not naive to paint an ideal picture for each department or group or individual that I work with or that is separate and apart in the corporate world today. It's never going to be ideal. But if you could just get 5, 10% better in your ability to trust one another, your ability to connect, your work product will be better. And that goes back to the first part of our conversation about always wanting to be a continuous learner and being present for people, right? And present in the project, present in the conversation, and present in your ability to connect. And that goes to that self-awareness. Am I connecting with this person I don't understand and or don't get along with? How do I overcome that? How do I get through that? And that's what we talk about in my workshops. And I'm sure you would agree with me, right? So if you look at teams that don't win on the field in my previous life, right? And then teams that aren't winning right now or have some barriers that aren't winning in corporate, it's their inability to connect and find common ground. There's lack of trust or difficult conversations are not being had because they don't have the skills to do that, right? They haven't worked at it. And it goes back to listening and patience. And that's what we talk about in my programs. And we dissect it and it's step by step and it's getting feedback. It's not me just talking at people. I want to hear, you know, what are these challenges? And it's all, you know, obviously confidential and left in that room, but we work to understand each other so they can connect better when they leave the room.
And so a lot of times it's up to the leader and what their level of self-awareness is. I mean, self-awareness, as we've talked today, is so critically important. Feedback is a great way to understand what your blind spots are. But besides feedback, Chris, what is another way that leaders can self-reflect or basically learn what their blind spots are?
People's response to you is a wonderful indicator. If you're concentrating on self-awareness, Damon, remember how we did this a few minutes ago when I did that kind of role play? When we're the leader, there's 20 people waiting for you on your team, and you're walking into the room, the meeting room, right? This isn't a virtual thing. Let's just talk. We'll talk in person for a second, okay? So to your point about self-awareness, just having an internal just checklist, right? Let's stop here before I open the door. To your point earlier, everything matters when you're the leader. Again, when you open that door and you walk through that room, you're being looked at and everything matters. Right? This is not a feedback to your great question right there. You're not getting feedback in real time. It's on you. So how do you enter that room? Are you smiling? Are you walking fast? Who are you looking at? What is the first thing you're going to say? Do you have a water with you? I mean, everything matters. It's not to you know, make us so overly self-conscious that we can't function. No, just give it some thought. Think about it. And enter the room. What is your aura? You know, even if it's a difficult topic or something serious or something timely, all of that matters. So it's like, are you consistent with how you were 2 hours ago? The topic can change, the severity of the topic can change, but you can still be that person that they rely on and see, right? And this is through, for me personally, a lot of trial and error. And experimentation, like, I didn't get them today. I was off. What can I do tomorrow? No one's giving me that feedback. I just know because I'm paying attention. Tomorrow, maybe I'll go in with a little bit of this. That agenda item that I had fourth, I should have moved higher because we didn't get enough of that. That's on me. And I'm talking to myself. This isn't anyone telling me this. It's just paying attention. It's like, okay, I plan on having six things I want to talk about. This one has a lot of weight. Does it? Let's see how, instead of leaving it at number six, let's see how the room is. How are they taking in this information? And maybe I can move up this a little bit more because the mood, the overall feel of the room and the people in the room is allowing me to bring this in here. So let's move this up. And this is all internally. You know, they're not seeing the agenda. They had it before, but they don't know what you're going to talk about. And it's just paying attention to how people are taking in the information. And that's all self-awareness. That's reading body language. That's reading feedback in real time, right? What's the humor level? What's the seriousness? This is not going to go well here. So now I have to back off a little bit. I have to pause. My language is, you know, I have to, all right, everybody, let's take this now. And then now they're listening because you've lessened how you're talking. Your cadence has changed. Perhaps how you've paused is allowing them now to listen. All of this, the nuances, I just have studied it and watched it and researched, you know, how do we see people? And a lot of it has to do with who you are as a leader. And your great point about command and control, again, Damon, anyone could do that. Anyone could walk into a room, be stern, and list things to do. But the feeling that you're giving the people that are hearing you, what are they thinking? They're thinking the same thing. Anyone could have done that. It's the nuance, the care, and the compassion in the delivery and reading and caring about how the flow is going helps people, in my opinion, do great work. They're cared for, they're thought of, and it's in real time.
And we're talking about connecting with people. And as a journalist, you've done a lot of this next one. And I'm talking about storytelling. And it's basically been a through line through your career. Why do you think storytelling is such a powerful tool for leaders? And how do you use it effectively?
I'm going to compliment you as a podcast host. That is a tremendously phrased question because you hit me in the heart with that. Damon, I love storytelling. I love listening to stories and I love telling them. I love writing them. Obviously, I did that for many, many years. Storytelling as a leader, you know, is powerful in so many ways. And it doesn't have to be a long, like, let's sit across the campfire here or around the campfire, not across it. That would be painful. You know what I'm saying, though? See, it's that self-awareness of what I just said. But Damon, it's just about, you know, storytelling brings people in. And it doesn't have to be like back in the day. It doesn't have to be those types of stories. It's painting a picture of what is possible. Storytelling is really effective, in my opinion, as a leader, to set hope and optimism. It's not Pollyannic positivity, like just seeing, you know that term in corporate nowadays, toxic positive. That's not what I'm talking about. It's creating hope and creating a future that could look really, really strong and productive if we do the following things. Here's what they are. Based on your feedback, what we've been talking about here today, I'm in a meeting, I'm back in that meeting. Based on your feedback and what we're talking about here today, here's what we can do with the people in this room. Because you said this, and I'm looking to the person to my left, we can do this. Because you said this, the person down the table to the right, we can do this. Do you guys know what that creates? That creates a possibility of this product being created. It then creates a possibility for us to possibly sell this product for what we sold a couple of years ago, but then times X because it has more value for the consumer. I'm making all this up, Damon, you know what I mean. But you're able to craft a story based on the information that you're hearing that gets people into it, fired up, ready to go. And that's the power of storytelling as a leader. They don't have to do it how I do it. I'm me, you're you. I would be engaged in your story or engaged in the CEO story down the street. It's all about being yourself and your authenticity shining through, creating opportunities through practical sharing that we've done in this meeting. I'm just giving one example. Or storytelling that has involved the past that perhaps could be applicable for right now. You got to be careful with that, though. You don't want to say, well, back in my day. You got to be careful with that, but sometimes it works. And those could be shorter, longer, depends on the mood. And sometimes a story can uplift a group if it's needed, right? A past success that we all had together. Remember, we can do this. Here's why. And you could see people elevating their moods and their body language is like, all right, that story made sense to me. Let's go. So I always enjoyed storytelling. Still do. It's one of my things, Damon.
So there's some of our listeners out there who are probably saying to themselves, you know, well, Chris has an innate ability to be a storyteller. What is a framework or maybe some resources that we could put in the show notes that they can reference after our conversation today where they can get better at being a storyteller? Because I believe that we're all storytellers and we all have the ability to get better. And it's such a critical, critical tool as a leader and a parent and a coach.
Agreed. So yes, I've been doing it many years. So you're right. I've done it. So of course. So I'll share what I've learned and then some research. Sure. It's your the power of your mind's eye in detail, but not to the extent where you're losing people, right? It goes back to Damon. It goes back to reading the room, right? You're telling a story, not to yourself. You're telling a story to people. So how can you be useful with the story you're about to tell to the people in the room? Again, it goes back to leadership. The leadership is not about you, nor is the storytelling. If the storytelling is meant to serve a purpose for the people listening, that's one thing, right? Be in service. I'm telling the story to you for this reason. Let me tell you a story. Sometimes it's for humor. Sometimes it's to lessen the stress in the room or the anxiety about a certain topic. If that's the purpose, say, hold on a second. Let me tell you a story. Or sometimes it's applicable, a story about achieving something so we can achieve something similar. Sometimes it's a story about people in history, right? A real story about a hero or somebody that we all know really well, but maybe there's a part of a speech that they gave that we didn't know. A level of detail is very helpful in storytelling, right? So what is the purpose? Who's the audience? How are you going to serve them? And remember, if it's a personal story, the level of detail is very helpful. It brings people in. I remember what I felt when I got my first base hit in Little League. Actually, Damon, this is a true story. I'll tell you the story right now. I was 10 years old. I was on the Mets, and we were playing the Cardinals. I remember the pitcher. I'm not going to say his name because why would I do that? He was a 12-year-old. I was 10. I was the starting right fielder. It was like 3 games in. I don't know why I didn't get hits the first few games because I was a 10-year-old learning how to play the game. Just didn't get hits yet. And I remember it was a Saturday morning, and I was up there. The bases were loaded. I think I batted 8th or 9th. He threw hard, and he threw me a pitch on the outside corner of the plate. I swung, and I said, oh, my goodness, I hit it. And it was going out to right field, and I was a little guy, and the ball was going out. And I remember the right fielder came in, and he couldn't get it, and it bounced and went over his glove. I could still see it in my mind's eye. And I said, oh, my God, I got a hit. I will never forget the euphoria I felt when that right fielder missed that ball. I hit first base. The crowd is going crazy. I hit second base. I was standing on second. All the crowd, there's probably 10 people there, going crazy. And I remember 2 runs scored. We won the game. We weren't very good that year, but I remember that, Damon, like it was yesterday. Why do I bring up that story? I don't have any idea, but it's the first thing that came to mind. But do you see the level of detail? Do you see the level of, the fact that I felt euphoric and I felt like, and I remember it, and this was a lot of years ago, but what I did is, and I could remember, the sun hitting where the sun was and the whole thing. And I didn't get many hits the rest of the season, but see how just weaving in little nuances about the story. I have no idea why I brought that up, but you made me tell a story. So that's the story I told. And perhaps that could be like that first moment of success. Like you weren't expected to have success. I didn't even know the ball was going to hit the bat, but you don't know what's coming. But I was in the batter's box and I was there to make contact and get that base hit, that first one, and I broke through. So maybe we can do that together as a team.
I love how you paint a picture and I almost felt like I was there. I could envision what you're talking about. I do have a concern though, Chris. Most of us started Little League at 7. So did you go 3 years without getting your first hit?
No. Okay. So good question. No, I played Pee Wee at 7 and 8 and then minors at 9. I was saying
all
in
right,
the majors.
Right.
Sorry.
No, you're all right. I just wanted to clarify. And I also want to be respectful of your time, but I got it. You know, you're about 105 episodes into your podcast, keeping the line moving. What is there like a common theme that you've listened to and heard over the years from your great guests when it comes to leadership?
So it's a lot about what we've talked about today. When, thank you for giving the shout out to Keep the Line Moving. I enjoy it very much. And I enjoy hearing the stories. Damon, it all comes back to, if I were to say, it's servant leadership. I am so lucky to have all these incredible guests. It all comes back to their basic understanding that a leader is there for the people, not the people there for the leader. It's pretty much that simple. Is it hard? Are there nuances? Go listen to some of them, everybody. You'll hear the nuances and the challenges to arriving at that point, right? That basic understanding. When we're leading, we're there for others. That we're there to understand. We're there to be compassionate. We're there to help them facilitate where they want to go so we can all be successful, including the leader. And then I always ask questions, you know, like, okay, have you seen leaders that don't do that? And then that becomes really interesting, right? Because I want to present both sides, you know, what are the challenges that the people that maybe do think command and control still works, or maybe do think of that old fashioned hierarchical type leadership. It's healthy, I think, to compare notes per se and learning from each other, right? Each other meaning myself and the guests. So I think that's valuable as well. But that's the fundamental consistency, is that leaders are there for their people, and they're there to help them understand themselves so everybody can succeed.
The theme of our conversation is caring about your people, right? And you said great leadership starts with caring and developing people. But how does that mindset actually lead to business results? Because at the end of the day, you have to have results.
Okay, so let's do what I just said about my podcast guests. What is the opposite of that? So let's role play again. You're not the leader now. We're just employees, you and I, right? And we walk in and we're interacting with the person that's leading us. And we perceive that person as to just giving us, they walked into the office, it's 8:45. Hey, Chris. Hey, Damon. Here's what you guys need to do today. You know, we got to get this done. You guys knew that, but you haven't done it yet. It's due Thursday. It's Tuesday afternoon. We got to rock on this. And it's 8:45. You're just putting your first coffee down and the person leaves the room. Are they leading? I don't know what that is. Hold on a second, though. So my point is this. How do you and I as employees feel about, I'm going to ask you, Damon, how do you feel about that if someone came in and said that to you? What's the feeling? Top off the top of your head right now, what do you feel?
They don't care about me. I'm not important. What I do here is not important.
Exactly. Whereas, if the leader comes in, same person, but different mentality, you and I are sitting in the office together, 8:45, same scenario. Smile on their face. Damon, Chris, what's going on? Hope you guys had a great night. Hey, listen, remember we have that project that's due on Thursday. Let's huddle up later. If you guys need me, if you don't, that's cool too. Anything you need, questions, just email me, text me. I got a meeting off site today. Just let me know. We'll get this done together. We'll get it done by Thursday. You guys cool? If you need anybody from resources or anything, or I can provide you data, whatever the case may be, we will get this thing done. I know you guys will. And I'll be around later this afternoon if you want to talk. Damon, how would you feel now about that exchange?
Cared for, respected, that my opinion matters.
Exactly. So the business ROI, when that leader leaves the room in scenario 2 versus scenario 1, obviously will be more productive, more productive work product will come out of that. How do you measure that? Well, there are surveys, there are ways to measure that, but you asked me the question. We just did an informal case study about two exchanges, a caring boss and one who doesn't. And the difference in time was probably, you guys all can go back and time it, is probably the difference of 3 or 4 seconds. It's a mindset. When you're cared for, you will do great work. When you're not cared for, Damon, the host of this podcast, shared, I'm not going to just put it on him. I would have felt the exact same way. I would have said, what was that? You know, I would have said this to myself, or if David and I were friends, I would say, that was interesting. Yeah, sure, we are getting paid. We have mortgages. We have responsibilities. We're going to do the work, right, for scenario one. But what will be the better version of that work? Most likely scenario two, right? You want to do great work for the person who cares for you. And it doesn't take a lot. It just takes a shift in mindset. Hope that answered your question.
It does. When you care and respect for your people, they don't want to let you down. So, Chris, where can our audience connect with you at?
So, GarganoLeadership.com is our website. I'm on LinkedIn. We have TikTok. We have Instagram for excerpts from the podcast. But the website is good. My email, I'll give them my email, ChrisG@GarganoLeadership.com. I would love to hear from folks. I love working with people. I love to wake up and have 7 workshops in the next 7 days. I just enjoy the heck out of it. And I enjoy helping people see the way they lead and just help them to come across in a way that they're proud of so they could, again, to your great last question, so they can, what is the end game? Is getting great work done. How do you get great work done? Care for your people. Care about what they do and then how you come across. It's very important.
Well, thank you, Chris. You've been a pleasure to have on the show. And for our listeners out there, do me a favor. If you haven't already, please rate and review our podcast. It's a big help. And also check out Chris's podcast, Keep the Line Moving. I hope to be a guest on it soon. And until next time, everybody, stay curious, keep learning, have a great day.